This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Hear what Irving School in Bloomington tries to do during a pandemic to attach to students who move in and out of schools more often than average.
At least come to school, whether we do it outside or inside when the weather gets worse, to have that, and that's another opportunity to make a connection.
Principal Messina Lambert says students who move frequently have more learning challenges. 80% of Irving student schools in Bloomington come from low-income families. Plus, we'll review the take from a big data dump of several hundred complaints about pandemic safety enforcement in McLean County, or the lack thereof. Normal Town Council member Stan Nord advocates working against town safety enforcement measures and the clapback from that. And the mayor of Normal talks about an increase in the local gas tax and what it will buy. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The Bloomington Normal YMCA is breaking ground on a new facility it will share with Easter Seals Central Illinois. Y President and CEO B.J. Wilkins says the 70,000-square-foot building will be more accessible than the nearly 50-year-old existing space that lacks an elevator.
This facility that we're looking to design really incorporates a lot of universal design concepts. In layman's terms, it's really taking the ADA compliance, the minimum threshold, and maybe going a little bit above and beyond that.
That includes features like a zero-depth splash pad and universal locker room to accommodate people with mobility challenges. Wilkins says the new center will let the Y expand existing programs like youth basketball and day camps. The center is expected to open in March of 2022. Bloomington Normal colleges are striking up a friendly competition to see who can get the most students registered to vote before the November election. The challenge includes Illinois State University, Illinois Wesleyan, and Heartland Community College. It runs through October 18th, the last day to register to vote online in Illinois. Katie Strezpek with ISU's Center for Community Engagement says results will be announced October 20th.
And the campus with the largest number of students registered through the competition will win the illustrious bragging rights and be named the voter registration champion for 2020.
Election officials say students may need to update their voter registration this year, even if they only move to a different dorm room. Students can also register to vote from their home address and request a mail-in ballot. Central Illinois Regional Airport has announced daily service to Detroit is back after a four-year hiatus. Director Carl Olson says the airport nearly had a deal in place with Delta Airlines in February, and then the pandemic hit.
We are getting ready to make the final announcement and get it loaded in the system and have today's event, and then got torpedoed actually by COVID. We had to kind of regroup and we came back strong and we were able to deliver it today.
Rivian Automotive has assured Delta it will heavily use the daily flights as it ramps up production of its electric vehicles in Normal. Service to Detroit starts October 11th. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Normal Town Council has raised the gas tax and changed the process for approving its salary schedule. Joining us to talk about those issues is Mayor Chris Koos.
Good to be here.
Nearly a year and a half after the city of Bloomington increased its gas tax by 4 cents to 8 cents per gallon, the town of Normal has now done the same. 2 weeks ago, you told WGLT on Sound Ideas the money will go to streets and infrastructure. Last night, part of the case made for the tax increase was about avoiding cuts to police and fire during the pandemic-caused period of lower revenue. So, would a town council really decide to cut police and fire instead of defer street repairs? Isn't that the choice set up with those two statements, that the money will go to roads and it's to avoid police and fire cuts?
Not directly, but I mean it's part of an overall budget process in a pandemic cycle. I mean, we have to make choices. Doing this fuel tax and putting that money towards roads allows us to be a little more flexible in our general fund.
For those who don't particularly want to pay more taxes, how will this affect gas prices?
Our research in this community, the last time this happened, and what happened to gas prices in Bloomington the second time they raised theirs, and looking at Champaign-Urbana, other communities, these tax increases do not affect gas prices. Gas is a highly commoditized item. We have watched gas prices for the last 3 or 4 months, and they've been completely stable between the two communities within a few cents of each other. Well, Bloomington's tax was eight cents a gallon, and ours was 4 cents a gallon.
Other council members have asserted that council member Stan Norrod has been saying revenue from the gas tax would be used to fund the underpass. A response to that assertion?
No, that is not the intention of this tax. This tax is designed for roads, sidewalks, ADA crossings, possibly additional funding for Connect Transit. The underpass has never been part of this conversation.
Councilmember Nord wanted the council to wait and see if the marijuana tax would offset a need for the gas tax. Is that reality-based?
We just don't know. Our best guess is the marijuana tax would raise a little bit less than a quarter of what the 25% of what the gas tax would raise.
Do you believe there's a policy problem with that approach to things, that like dollars go to like purposes, and that the marijuana tax should go to something else?
I don't like the idea of assigning a tax to a certain task. It really hamstrings you in the long term in terms of addressing whatever current need you may be dealing with. Although we do have the need for roads, so I'm more comfortable road work, transportation infrastructure, I'm more comfortable with that because there's always a need there.
The council has decided to lump in annual salary increases for non-union workers with the annual budget vote. What's the rationale for that?
It just makes it easier for everyone. The fact that we go from twice a year COLA adjustments to once a year, and if they're under 2% or under, it's just part of the budget process. So during the budget process, if there's a concern about that number, we have the discussion then. It's not like we don't have the discussion. And if it's over 2%, then it requires distinct council action.
After compounding interest, does going to a once a year instead of a twice a year adjustment save a little money for the town?
It does.
How much?
I couldn't tell you what that number
would be.
I'd have to do a calculation and talk to Andrew Hewen to get that number.
Many policy bodies resist lumping different policy decisions into one omnibus decision because it's easier to log roll and make potentially controversial decisions fade into the background. Why not keep the policy choice for salary increases separate from the budget?
It just streamlines our process. I mean, it's something we've done every year for as long as anybody can remember. It streamlines the process.
Does it make it more difficult to vote no on a salary increase if you also have to vote no on the budget?
No, not at all. At the time we go through the budget process, if there's concerns that it's not appropriate to do it, the council can remove it from the budget. During our budget hearings, there's a public hearing prior to the adoption of the budget. There's opportunity for council to react to extreme times where they may not want to do that.
Mayor Chris Coos, thank you for joining us.
Always good to be here.
The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most days after the day after the council meeting next week. Mayor Terry Renner. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. I'm Charlie Schlenker. WGLT is reporting on a big data dump of about 300 complaints filed against businesses and other organizations with the health department. Since the pandemic began 5 months ago, it's been an open question how safety protocols are being enforced, or even if they are. There were even questions early on about what the rules were and which businesses could be open. Reporter Eric Stock looked into how compliant people are in general and businesses as well. Eric, what does the data show?
I think the biggest trend involved complaints regarding social distancing and wearing masks. The governor put the mask mandate in effect on May 1st, but at that time, most businesses were still closed, except for essential ones, grocery stores, hardware stores, and the like. So the number of complaints didn't really noticeably rise until the summer as businesses started to reopen and more people felt reasonably safe in venturing out. In June, we saw an average of about 1 to 2 complaints per day countywide. In July, that more than doubled to about 3 to 4 per day, and they were all across the board, all types of businesses.
What do businesses say when the health department says, hey, what were you doing here?
So first, when the health department gets a complaint, they do follow up with a phone call if it's a first complaint. If there have been multiple complaints, the department will follow up with a visit and an inspection on site. In a lot of cases, business managers said they were doing what they can. Now, sometimes they would say they weren't aware of maybe specific guidelines, but they often say they're doing what they can with the staff they have. They can't monitor customer behavior 24/7. They can't always make sure people are 6 feet apart at all times. Restaurants seem to have the toughest time in managing this because of the close quarters many of them work in. You know, restaurant kitchens are tight spaces. They can also get very hot, especially in the summertime. And often managers would say they can't keep their mask on all the time because breathing becomes extremely difficult, especially if they already have breathing problems. And many store managers, especially the corporate-owned stores, had indicated problems with unruly customers. Walmart and Dollar General in particular said to the health department they backed off the requirement and instead encouraged people to wear masks. Employees don't want a confrontation. Managers said as much. They don't want customers to come in and cause a scene or threaten employees, so they took a more hands-off approach, and so that leads to fewer people wearing masks, and then that leads to more calls to the health department complaining that, you know, store customers and sometimes employees aren't taking the protocols as seriously as they feel they should.
We've heard a lot about how tough businesses have it. Does that come through in the tenor of the responses to these complaints?
Yeah, a number of business owners and managers had said that there were economic pressures, perhaps less so with the masks, but I think more so with the reopenings. A skate shop in Bloomington told the health department they were prepared to fight their temporary shutdown in court. They did not believe the state could or would shut down their business. And, of course, a skating rink is not the type of business that can go virtual as others could. The owner said after being shut down for 2 months at the start of the pandemic, they couldn't afford to stay closed any longer. They were simply going to have to go out of business if they didn't open their doors. They were allowed to open a short time later as the state moved on to phase 4, and that business is now up for sale.
As with the 1918 flu, enforcement varies across the nation. In some cities and municipalities, it's really draconian with heavy fines and strict enforcement. In others, like McLean County, there's less of that, just a repeated requests and efforts at education, but not treating it too much as a finable or criminal offense. Why is that approach taken here?
We started with the health department, and we talked to Tom Anderson, who heads up the health department's environmental division, and they are the ones that investigate these complaints. And he said it's not up to the health department, that it's left up to the state's attorney. And state's attorney Don Knapp has said repeatedly that none of these cases that he has seen rise to the level of a criminal violation, even after the governor called for local governments to consider fines against businesses that violate these guidelines. There just doesn't seem to be an appetite to take that on, especially when many businesses are already struggling because of this pandemic, and there perhaps haven't been specific expectations set for fines or other punitive measures for specific violations. It has been largely left to local governments to figure it out, and most of them simply don't have the appetite to do that.
Final observations about this deep dive into complaints about COVID compliance.
Well, the health department, as you said, they see their role as one of public educators and one of advocacy. They weren't quick to, you know, publicly shame violators. And the county has generally said from the beginning that businesses are compliant, especially when they get a complaint against them. That does generally seem to be the case. You know, Tom Anderson with the health department had said if you're a business that doesn't seem to be taking the health precautions seriously, you should feel empowered to tell the manager, tell the owner, and let them know that you may stop shopping there if you don't feel safe. You know, at a time when a lot of businesses are struggling, they're trying to tell business owners that there was a financial incentive to following the guidelines, that people should feel safe when they walk into your store or restaurant, and I think that's what they're trying to convey.
Eric Stock, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Normal Town Council member Stan Norrod objects to ordinances imposing fines for large gatherings during the pandemic. So much, he offers a way he says will get around them. Eric Stock reports town and health officials say Norrod is wrong.
Norrod was the only council member who voted against the town's emergency orders when the council moved to limit parties and gatherings near campus to 10 or fewer people and require social distancing and masks. The council also banned bars and restaurants from serving patrons unless they are seated. Violators could face fines of up to $750. Norrod voted against the emergency ordinances because he says the McLean County Health Department should make the call on restrictions, not the town. Norrod went on Facebook and offered a way around them.
A protest is okay. So as long as you have a party, and let's call it, say, the Coos Party Penalty Protest, if you have one of those at your house, then that's not subject to this ordinance.
Coos is a reference to Town of Normal Mayor Chris Coos. He issued the orders the council later adopted. Coos says this proves Norrod isn't interested in working with other council members on any issue.
He's certainly entitled to have that opinion, but to work against his own council on something that is now law in the Town of Normal, I don't feel is appropriate for him at all. He can continue to talk about it, but he shouldn't try to encourage people to break the ordinance.
But does Norrod have a point that protests are exempt? Racial justice protests have been going on for months in Bloomington Normal and all over the country at a time when public health officials were urging people to stay inside to limit the spread of COVID-19. We asked the town's legal department for an answer. The town responded, no, protests are not exempt. The town's Director of Communications and Community Relations, Kathy Olofsson, says the gathering ordinances are intended to be content neutral. She says the town values free speech and the participants at recent demonstrations have followed safety precautions. She says the ordinances apply to apartment complexes in town and other residential units in and around campus, not where you would generally see a protest or other demonstration. Olofsson adds that the town is working with local apartment complex owners and ISU to be proactive in preventing large-scale gatherings from occurring. Though the recent flash mobs that YouTube pranksters the Nelk Boys created on campus show how hard that can be. We asked a McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight if someone reported for violating the ordinance, said their gathering was a protest, would that be okay? She also said protests are not exempt.
We're not aware of any specific distinction in the law, statutes, or ordinances for protests, though we continue to evaluate that. It's a question of enforcement. We will continue to investigate.
The county has so far not issued fines or other penalties against anyone who violates protocols. County leaders say they prefer education over enforcement. McKnight acknowledges any event with large groups of people in close quarters can be a problem.
There's always an elevated risk in large gatherings, and we ask everybody to avoid large gatherings and practice social distancing, wear their face coverings. Those are all tools that can help us keep ourselves safe.
The McLean County Health Department has said there are no known coronavirus cases linked to the many racial justice protests that have taken place in Bloomington Normal over the summer. I'm Eric Stock.
Stan Norrod replies he's glad the health department is looking into the issue. When asked if he feels any obligation to abide by the law once it's passed, Norrod did not respond. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Remote learning is a challenge for families, rich, poor, and everyone in between. But for low-income families, the challenge of going to school without going to school is even greater. Ryan Denham talks with Messina Lambert, the principal at Irving Elementary School. Irving has nearly the highest population of low-income students in Bloomington. Messina says remote learning is going better than expected, in part because she and her staff temper their expectations. She says teachers tend to want to overachieve.
If you were to walk into a classroom here at Irving, you would see in many classrooms, teachers have a couple different screens they're working from, whether it be another computer monitor or even some of them brought in TVs so that they can see all of their kids on one screen and have other things on their Zoom here, which again, that's not how we're set up to function here, but they have figured those things out. They're showing that they're not just gonna, you know, go through the motions and be that teacher that's just getting it done. They're going to go above and beyond like they normally do and just learn this new technology to go along with it. So I've been so impressed with what's able to happen and how they're meeting the needs of kids in this new manner.
What's been the biggest challenge so far?
Technology issues have been a big challenge. Some of it starting with my teachers and staff needing to learn the technology that they're now forced to use as the only delivery method of instruction. So that was step one. And then from the student side, just our devices, like so many districts in not just our area, but our nation, you know, we're all needing devices. And we had ordered new devices and there were just some you know, supply chain issues that have prevented them from getting to us in a timely fashion. So we're still, we were fortunate enough to have enough devices for staff and for students. They're just not the devices we would have preferred to given out. So there's some issues with those.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because Irving Elementary School has more students coming from low-income families than really just about every other school in Bloomington Normal. It's about 80% for you. So what are the unique challenges that come along with that during remote learning?
First of all, devices. We were able to provide every student a device regardless of their income. It's just a school-issued device. So that was step one. So parents didn't have to worry about a device. They just had to worry about if it was, you know, broken, if there was a tech issue. So which we've been able to support with. The second thing is actually having Wi-Fi access, because we know that that is not, you know, that's not the same type of utility like water and electricity and gas. So many families have those, but if you've got multiple kids, using your own Wi-Fi at home can really impact the band, you know, the speed and the accessibility based on which, what level of bandwidth you have. So we have been able to provide through the district for our low-income students hotspots if they need them. And they're good for up to eight children. Eight devices can be connected at one time. We're also continuing to provide lunches, meals. We're doing that twice a week. We're giving them multiple lunches. We have a few sites throughout the community. We have one at every school. So Irving has a site. And then we also have sites at, you know, the Bloomington Housing Authority locations like Wood Hill and other points in town that are strategic. And then we're giving on Tuesday and Thursday lunches and breakfasts out. And now they've just made it, the state has just made it possible for those to be free, following different guidelines than we typically have to follow during the school year. All of Irving students would get it for free anyway, but now their siblings in junior high and high school who may have only been, you know, paying a reduced rate or maybe paying the full rate can also have those meals for free.
Figuring out childcare during remote learning has been a big challenge. I mean, even if you do have, you know, a lot of money or that luxury. So how are your family is navigating that?
Yeah, I was really concerned actually when we first announced, because that was the first backlash that I was, you know, seeing on social media is now I have to pay hundreds of dollars for my kid to be in a supervised setting or a learning pod or something like that. But I think I will say the community has stepped it up. There's a lot of different places and organizations that have provided resources and childcare places for children, even if they're not traditionally open during the day as a daycare center. We also see some families who have used extended families. So maybe the child is with grandma during that time, or grandma is in charge of remote learning for that time period.
Irving Elementary also has a higher than average student mobility rate, which, you know, really means that students come and go from the school, moving in and out more often than their peers in other buildings. Historically, I know you've had all sorts of really smart ways of tackling that, but how do you build those connections now when you literally cannot go to your school?
Well, one of the things that we did that was unique was we extended our institute days to be a full week instead of normally we would just take 3 days or so. And then next week, so the week of the 24th, we had parents come in with kids to pick up their devices and to pick up their instructional materials that they're going to need for at-home learning. So that was a great opportunity to just make a connection with a family that was new. So that was really helpful to at least make have a face with a name, you know. And then we'll do some pickups again, material pickups, because of course we don't know how long this is going to last, and we couldn't give them everything that they might need for even the full semester at one time. So we'll do another swap out, supply swap out, or device, device pickup if we get our new devices in. At some point we'll get them, but we'll have parents and families come in another time, or at least come to school, whether we do it outside or inside when the weather gets worse, to have that. And then it's another opportunity to make a connection.
That's Irving Elementary School Principal Messina Lambert speaking with Ryan Dowd. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.